Just Not Good Enough with Chaz House on FUBAR Radio.
Paul Marks, can I welcome you to Just Not Good Enough?
Hello there.
Nice to meet you. Nice to see you here in the studio as well, which makes it obviously a lot easier for me because you get a bit of extra communication with body language and stuff like that.
We can bond, absolutely.
We can indeed, yes. You've well known in the mental health world. You've done TED Talks, and I know you work in that business, that aspect of business as well,
yeah.
Particularly for entrepreneurs. But just before we get into a conversation, can you just give us a little bit about you, why you do what you do, what it is you do, where you come from, if you want, what your family's like, anything you like, just as an intro.
Yeah, of course. I'll start lightheartedly.
Yeah.
Because of what this podcast is and what it's called. And when I got the call to come, I looked at the catalogue of people that you'd interviewed. Really impressive. And I said to my beautiful wife, Steph, I'm not sure I'm that caliber of person.
Well, you're perfect then with that attitude.
And she did joke and she said, talk about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I'm just not good enough.
Yeah.
And it was. But you know, my background is 20 years in people strategy, talent management, and executive coaching. I worked for large tech companies like Finastra, which is the third largest fintech in the world.
Oh,
and
okay.
I've been the first on the ground for startups as well. So I've done big and small.
Yeah.
Always with a people lens.
Is that your back? Is your sorry? I am going to interrupt you. I say this to everybody,
course.
But it's completely okay if you want to interrupt me.
Yeah.
But is that? Did you have and this is a terrible expression, an HR type background, or is this something that you've just morphed into because you're interested?
No, always been interested. So, not many people know this. More people know it now.
Well, I don't know. It depends whether you get any listeners, of course.
My wife and my little boy. So two of them will listen.
Good.
But I always wanted to be a personal trainer, and I studied
Did
that
you?
At university, in the late 90s, because I like people. I like to improve people's lives.
Yeah.
But I never did it from a HR point of view. But everything I've always done for 20 years has always been with a people lens.
Okay.
So it's how do you get the best out of people to drive strength in them, strength in an organization?
Yeah.
But I've always done it commercially and operationally. And then about 6-7 years ago, I bridged the gap between HR, which is a little bit more transactional.
Well,
legally,
HR's the wrong
policy.
Expression, actually, isn't it?
Human resources.
It doesn't say what it should be.
Yeah,
in
it's
this
quite archaic. Can we talk about mental health and the rebranding of mental health?
Yeah.
But HR is having a rebrand in people and culture. So instead of being called a HR expert, director, you're called a head of people.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, interestingly, I'm a trustee of National Star College, which looks up to severely disabled kids. And they have a head of people, a director of people. And I mean, I'm a bit anachronistic. I'm a bit old. And so therefore, HR is my thing. But that just makes sense because it's about, as you say, getting the most best out of people.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I've done for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 6-7 years, I've worked predominantly with startups. I've worked with founders and helping them build themselves to help them build stronger organizations.
Why startups? Because
I like to work with founders. Founders drive the economy.
Yes, they
do. You know, founders are the best and the worst breed. You know, they are.
I think I've written that down somewhere in my notes. Yeah.
But they are. They're fascinating. In so many ways, you know, they are creators, they're inspirers, they're heroes to many, but they're also, some of them, not all of them, megalomaniacs, egotistical, narcissists.
Bullies,
you know, and I don't think they are deliberate in what they do. They're just uber passionate in what they do. And to some, if you can't hack it, it comes across as being a bully, really.
Yeah.
But what we don't appreciate, if you don't appreciate founders, is that whatever we feel picking up a paycheck, they feel 10, 20, 30, 40 times more because they have to pay everyone. You know, we rely on them to pay our mortgage. So the pressure that we have, they have it even more so. And we don't really empathize with founders because there's this bravado with a founder, they're heroes. Yeah. And they're big and they're strong.
Yeah, and they're macho.
Yeah, but you know, what eats inside them is the pain every day to try and build a business and try and be special and try and succeed.
Because, the behavior, though, you see, one of the things that, I mean, particularly my experience when I was at Superdry particularly, was the board behavior was appalling in some instances. Now, this is not an entrepreneur who's living under massive stress because of what he does. These are non-exec directors who stroll in, you know, once a month for a board meeting and probably do maybe two other days during the month. So they're not feeling the stresses of the business, but they behave like absolute shit. And when you've got a mental health condition like I have, and like I guess some of the people that you deal with have, then that's quite hard to take. So why, I always ask myself, well, why do they have to behave like that? What is it about them that makes them behave like that?
Why do they do what they do as NEDs or chairs? You know, I heard one of your podcasts with this ex-CEO of North Star talking about...
National Star. David Ellis.
Yeah, and he was talking about giving back.
Yeah.
And you had that conversation with him about that. Are they giving back because they've been successful and they're doing something else?
Yeah, but
possibly some are. But, you know, but ultimately they're doing it because they want to earn money. Why investors brutal? You know, VCs, PEs, people on boards, they're not doing it to become friends with a founder or a board.
No.
They're doing it to make cash.
But it doesn't mean, I mean, I'm going
to
come
on to what... It doesn't mean they have to be who they are. But
your whole... rationale for your healthy returns and things like that is about getting people to look at themselves, be aware of themselves, understand themselves, and that has to come out as a change in behavior, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, the founder or the board, everyone mirrors them. You know, everyone looks at them and goes, if they're going to behave like that, good or bad, that's the right way to be.
That's what success
they're my
looks
leader.
Like.
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm going to do that as well.
Yeah.
So you're creating this environment that you're allowed to be a bully or you're allowed to shout at other people.
Yeah.
You know, every employee on the floor is mirroring what that demigod in front of them is doing, being, saying, acting.
But there's one thing that you've said in some of the things I've read about you is about silence, right? And I think you started your TED Talk, didn't you, with a... I've broken every bone in my body, I think it was in 2018.
Well, I had the panic attack in 2018, and then I took the mask off, shall we say, in 2020 when I stood on stage and I talked about it.
Was that TED Talk?
That was a TED Talk in October 2020.
Wow, that was really brave at that stage of your, I guess, recovery.
Yeah, it's. Life is tough, you know, and I'll read this Rocky quote that in a minute. But, you know, we all go through a journey of survival, and the recovery is long and long and long.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
The 2018 was an explosion of many, many years of struggles. And
did you realise you were struggling, or was it at that moment it sort of crystallised everything? Because you were working...
I suffer from anxiety. Yeah.
How were you today coming in here?
Fine. You know what? I don't mind talking about myself.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah. I think it's therapeutic to do it.
Yeah.
If I'm honest.
I have nothing to hide. What you see is what you get. And I'm really cool with all of this. It was therapeutic to do the TED Talk, and it was beautiful that people rang up afterwards and said, these are powerful CEO people that I've known for years, and said, thank you, I've suffered as well.
Mm.
And I never did it for that reason. I did it for myself, selfishly, for myself.
Yeah, but that's fine, isn't it? Because by doing that, you're therapeutizing or something, whatever the word is, yourself, but you're also helping other people to say, actually, it's okay to do this. It's okay to talk about it.
Yeah, it's just normalizing the conversation. But going back to, you know, it was brave after 2 years. Yeah, I'm really fortunate in that I have an amazing wife. genuinely have, I'm not saying this because she's going to listen to this. I say it to everyone I meet. I'm really fortunate. I met her 20 years ago and she is my rock. Mm. And when I had my episode in 2018, I don't know what happened. I was just upstairs and I just cried. And it was awful. And my little boy at the time was two. And I said this on the TED Talk, you know, I didn't feel like the superhero he thought I was. I was embarrassed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
shame.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't want him to think that I was this weak individual because he looks up to you, like people look up to founders. And you know, Steph was there. Thank goodness she was there. And she helped me rise up again. You know, I describe it as this complex jigsaw puzzle. You know, 100-piece jigsaw puzzle, and you can just drop it on the floor, and every piece is scattered on the floor. And then over time, you have to pick up each piece, put it back, and work out it goes where.
Yeah.
But it takes time to build that jigsaw puzzle again. And it was after a couple of years where I studied myself, more than I'd ever studied myself. I studied my surroundings. I looked at other people around me. I tried to work out why it happened. Was it me? Was it people I was surrounded by? The whole situation. And it was at a time that I felt strong enough to talk about it for myself, cathartically, but also to try and reach out to other people to help them as well. Mm. So, yeah, it took 2 years. It could take people years and years. Am I better now? A little bit better. You know, I know my trigger points.
Yeah.
I know what to do. I know how to switch off. I know how to relate to people a lot better. You know, I know how to act around people. But yeah, it was the right time, the right place, and the right message for me then. And it set me on a path to help other people.
Mm. I want to come back to what you did for yourself, perhaps after we've talked about what you do for other people, because the two aren't necessarily the same. I mean, they're obviously, it's grounded in the same sorts of things. But
yeah.
So in your role at the moment with your business, what do you do? How do you go about it?
Yeah. Can I read this quote?
Yes, do. Yeah,
it's really important. And anyone that's done a resilience workshop with me will have heard this quote.
Okay.
And I usually say to people, in a little nasty way, I go, I'm not going to tell you who said it. And in the audience, tell me who you think it is. And they go, oh, Socrates or all these, you know, Nietzsche and these people.
Yeah, yeah.
So the quote is, the world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place. I don't care how tough you are. It will beat you to your knees. And it'll keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't how hard you hit. It's about being how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Yeah, wow. I love that bit about keep moving forward.
And that's what life's all about.
Yeah, take life's knocks, but actually it's how you deal with them, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the message that I give to people. So that was actually Rocky that said that.
Yes.
And I talked about Rocky just before we got on there. My son's middle name is Rocky. So that was in Rocky.
Is that why?
It was my screensaver in 2015.
Was
and it? And we were looking for a middle name. We couldn't think of any. We were going traditional. And then my wife was pregnant. And I rang her up and said, Steph, I've got a middle name at last. Sorry, 2016, she was tired. I'm like, let's call him Rocky. She's like, oh, I'm too tired. Let's just do it. I'm like, done. Let's do it. Let's sign the contract.
Nice one.
But you know, I grew up with Rocky. You know, I born in 77. It came out in 76. And I just love the messaging. The School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
And that quote, I say at the beginning, I said, of every resilience workshop, it's a realization that life is tough. It doesn't matter who you are, life is really tough.
Do you think that life is tough and it's going to knock you? So should you be a punch bag and absorb it, using the boxing analogy?
Yeah.
Or should you transfer it to somebody else through aggressive behavior or whatever?
So I've been bullied at work. And I think there was another conversation I had with someone about bullying at work.
Mm.
It might have been the Heathrow CFO, who's phenomenal.
Wasn't he good?
Wow. I mean, he's one of the most beautiful people I've ever met.
Honestly, I mean, I fell in love with him. I didn't, but I liked him the minute we opened up the teams. And I'm seeing him at an event in April, I think it is. He's one of the speakers.
Headshot, I think. I can't remember the
event. No, it's the water cooler.
Water cooler, yeah. Yeah, because I mean, you talked about, you know, boarding school and that. Yeah. So, no, you should never be a punchbag, but sometimes you're too weak to not be. So you have to take it. But yeah, I talk about my wife and with founders, and we've seen this in COVID. So the concept isn't new now. That we all need a support bubble. Everyone knows now what a bubble is. You know, your two or three closest people.
COVID did as well there, didn't it?
Yeah, to understand what it means to have one or two or three really close people to be in your bubble, your support bubble. And that's where getting through life becomes easier. You take loads and loads of punches, and it's hard to pick yourself up when you're on the ground. But if you have someone there helping you get back up, brush it down, and keep moving forward, it was just an arm around the shoulder and stagger. It's just there. But if you're on your own, getting punched all the time, it is tough.
Yeah, and that's my Superdry experience, funnily enough. But I was speaking to two ladies at National Star yesterday, funnily enough, and they both, I didn't know this at the time, but they said, we've heard your radio show and we like it, you know. And then they said, we're the same. I'm the same. I live with anxiety. Yeah. And the other lady said, I live with clinical depression, which is basically what I've got. Mm-hmm. And they message each other during the day and ask each other how they are. And I think one works for the other, actually. But if one needs a day off, she just says, oh, I'm feeling shit today. You know, Christ, I can't do this. She says, yeah, have a day off. It's fine. And I just think that is so wonderful because that's the support bubble.
Yeah.
But it's also helping people give permission in a psychologically safe environment to hold their hand up and say, I'm feeling shit. It doesn't turn them into a bad person or a poor worker or an incompetent person. It just says, today, I can't do this, but I can do it tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, it's so true. And that's one of the most important things within the workplace or any environment is psychological safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you can be open and just say, you know what, I just feel pretty crap today. Yeah, I just need an hour offline. Gets people talking.
Yeah.
And then it normalises the whole conversation.
You see, and I mean, my interest is big business and your interest is small business, although I do a little bit of small business mentoring, actually.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But not about behaviour, it's about investment and growth. Right? But my interest is big business because there, you're behind the boardroom, doors closed, the behaviour could be anything, frankly. Mm. And it never gets called out. You never get the opportunity to say, you know, sod off, mate. You know, don't talk to me like that because, in essence, they're ahead, they're above you. And the impact that then has on you, where you've got nobody to talk to because you can't put your hand up because you think your career might be ended.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a real dilemma for people.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the whole workplace well-being thing is a conundrum for everyone. And no one's cracked it yet. And, you know, big business, small business, you know, behaviours and values are really key. Big business is obviously harder than small business because there's so many different layers.
Mm.
You know, it starts from the top, whichever company, whichever size
you
are. But the trickle-down effect on a big business, it takes a long time to change behaviours.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could get a FTSE 100 chief executive to hold their hand up in post and say, I've got a vulnerability, because that would give permission to everybody in that organisation to do the same, wouldn't it?
Would it though? That's the thing. I don't know, because, you know, if you're talking about a 10,000 person business, however big business, and the CEO goes that's really cool, you know, and credit to him. I don't know if anyone's done that.
No. Not to my knowledge.
And yeah, and it's probably a point that you've made, but, you know, it might not affect three layers down if that manager is not a nice person and that team says to the manager, I'm not feeling too good. Like, well, I don't care. You know, I've got my numbers to hit. So, you know, yes, yeah, it starts from the top, and, actually, it, and it helps.
You're right. That's a nuance I hadn't.
Yeah, but unless everyone is in the same place, and everyone is a caring, sharing, kind person, which we know they're not.
Yeah,
it's not going to make too much of a difference. And it might actually have the opposite effect, that people think it's okay, yet the managers that are under pressure from the managers on top that are under pressure, and it goes right to the top.
I think he's weak and I'm going to take his job. It is complicated.
It's really difficult. The reason why I work for big corporates, and I love the organisations that I've worked with, but for startups, you can see change quicker. You can make an impact quicker.
Yeah.
And that's why I like doing what I do in that space.
Let's talk about that a little bit then, because I don't know much about startups, at least working in them. I see them from the outside, and generally, you know, the founder is looking for money, so he's as nice as pie.
Yeah.
Which sort of follows. And so, but you don't really see the behavior. You might get a little inkling of it, you know, but you really don't see it. But there is a stereotypical reputation around entrepreneurs that they are hard as nails, you know, tough-nosed businessmen, you know, blah, 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 blah. And do you actually see that when you work with these people, or do you, what do you see?
I need to bring out the vulnerability in them. Yeah, I've worked with hard founders, and they have to have that bravado. They can't show a chink in the armor to the people, to the investors, to everyone else. But the reason why I get brought in is because they need help. They need external help, a neutral voice, a neutral mind, a neutral lens to say, this is what you need to do to strengthen your own resolve and your business's resolve. Because if you're not strong, your business is not strong.
Yeah.
So for me, I see the vulnerable side. And I go deep where most people can't go deep.
Okay, how do you do that then?
Treat them like they're normal.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing.
But it's true that, you know, it sounds silly, but yeah. I couldn't give a monkers if they're, you know, got an ego or anything like that. Leave that at the door. You know, you don't have to tell me the greatest person. You know, the reason why I was chatting is because you need a bit of help. You know, you may be struggling at home. You know, you may be struggling with addiction. Yeah, yeah, it might just be runway. You've not got the cash.
Yeah.
Lots of different things, but we need to be honest. Because if you're not honest, you will fail. Your marriage, your partnership will fail. Co-founder relationships will fail. Investor relationships will fail. The business will fail. So I'm not there to talk strategy.
Yeah, no.
I do that day to day. That's my kind of day job
as
well, business strategy. However, for this person in front of me, in this confidential environment, we don't talk it outside these four walls. Talk about you. And why founders like that is, no one ever asks them about them. It's all, because a founder doesn't think about themselves. You know, for them, it's about investors. It's about customers. It's about employees. It's about product. It's about tech. It's about the bank balance. It's never about themselves. It's never about, you know, that mirror and ask themselves how they feel. So when I generally say, forget about business for a moment. Forget about 3-year strategy and what you're going to tell the board. Let's talk about you. How are you doing, genuinely? And they're like, oh, no one asked me that. Can I have a moment to think about that?
How long does it take for them to answer that question? Because, I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, yeah, I'm fine, actually. Yeah, I'm really good. Oh, great. You know, we've got so many things going on. It's really exciting.
It takes a few of the same question to ask them.
Yeah.
Because you say, how are you doing? And they go, I've got a real issue with the HR director.
Yes.
You know, or this investor's really pissing me off.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care. Yeah. How are you doing?
Yeah.
I go, well, you know, product's not where it needs
to be.
Yeah,
the sales are down.
Yeah.
I know. Like, yeah. Everything relates back to their business.
Yeah. That's all they talk about. And that's fine, because they live and breathe it. But I said, no, how generally are you doing? How do you feel right now? And then they'll start to think, okay. They'll have a deep breath and they'll think, I go home, don't speak to the wife, I work all night. But yeah, one realization with founders men or women, doesn't matter who they are, is, and it comes up in the first conversation, is if they've not got a supportive partner at home, they're really going to struggle. Because if the partner doesn't get the journey they're on and what they're doing and the risks they're taking for the family, it's not going to work, because you need that outlet at home.
Is there an onus, do you think, on the entrepreneur to take time out, think about themselves of what they're doing, knowing that they've perhaps got the support of the family and friends and so on, but actually that's one thing. So you've got the business, you've got the support of friends and family, but you're the entrepreneur's in the middle here. How do you get them to think about themselves? What is it that they need to do slightly differently, maybe?
It's the realization that if they're not caring and performing, none of the left or right are going to work. The family ain't going to work because they're going to be so highly strung and stressed. They're just going to take it out on the home life.
Because it is a release, isn't it? I mean,
it is their release. Leave work. And it's not a deliberate thing. It's just, it's their release.
Yeah.
And they'll shut themselves away and they won't speak and they'll just keep banging away all night at work.
Yeah.
At work, you know, you can try and hide it as much as you want. You can say the mask, but you know, you can't come in and fake it all the time. And that's where the bullying or the narcissism and everything else comes in. So if you're not sorting yourself out, which the heartbeat of the family, the heartbeat of the business, it's all just going to explode. So it's a realization that if you're not caring for yourself, nothing else is going to work.
Mm. Do you give them techniques, tools, and so on, in much the same way maybe a therapist would, as to what they can do during the day, for example, or you know, if they're commuting, how do they handle themselves on the train? You know, because this morning, interestingly, I did a bit of meditation on the train, right, just to you know. Breathe out, relax, shut my eyes actually as well, and just think about what's going on inside and then the noises that I can hear. And I don't know, did it do me any good? Well, maybe not, but I do that. I'm doing that more and more. Is it that sort of thing that you get them to do?
Yeah. So one thing I say to anyone, be it founder one-to-one or in workshops, is you know, I'm not a trained clinician. And it's really important that I say that to everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a practitioner. You know, what I've done is what I've learned, and what works for me could work for you. And it has worked for some people. So, yeah, there are recommendations on what can work. Will meditation work for it? I can't meditate. You know, I'm borderline ADHD.
Do you know, my therapist said I'm AD, actually. I don't think I've got the HD, but I'm definitely AD.
So I thought I was. But the hype of it isn't that you're just like up and down. It's like reactionary stuff. So,
well, maybe I am then.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, is it? So many people say they are now. It's great. It's become like more in the forefront. But you know, the fact is that founders are six times more likely to be ADHD.
Yeah, I mean, you've got some really interesting facts.
And so, yeah, there are some shocking stats about founders and entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And they generally are awful. But the fact is that if you are a founder, you've got them anyway. But I think people think that...
Do you need them?
You do need them. You're a risk taker. You can multitask. You can do lots of different things. You can run at a zillion miles an hour. And that's kind of what makes you a founder or an entrepreneur. But a lot of people confuse it. You think you have got ADHD or you're depressed or you're stressed because you're a founder. No, you're a founder because you've got all that stuff, and that's what makes you successful. Going back to your question, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a founder or you're just me or you, in so much that, you know, I call it the five wells of life, and that is sleep well, eat well, move well, work well, live well.
Well, okay.
And that's not something that I've come up with, but it's kind of how you live every day.
I'm just going to make a note of that. I get fantastic little nuggets out of these shows, and that's one of them, because it just captures everything, doesn't it? So, I mean, well, sleep, eat, move, live,
and work well. And if you can combine all of them together,
those first four are life, aren't they?
Yeah,
life. Work is now. life, but it's work is way the capitalist society and everything else that's going on is work is a thing that we're now in amongst.
It is absolutely, but you have to combine all of them for it to work. You need to get 6, 7, 8 hours sleep, of good sleep. People say they can do 4 hours.
Yeah, it's bollocks.
Well, none of us are Maggie Thatcher and we can't do the 4 hours.
Well, I'm not sure she did that well on it, actually. But anyway.
No, but anyway.
That's another story.
We don't want to digress into 80s politics. But yeah, you need to sleep well. And we all know that good sleep versus bad sleep. We all wake up, groggy, awful, or okay.
Yeah.
And set you up for the day.
Yeah.
Eat well. I think only over the last couple of years, people start to appreciate nutrition and diet, and amazing people like Tim Spector of Zoe has come to the fore.
Oh, you must have done that at your college then, didn't you? With your, was it sports science you did? I can't remember.
No, I did economics.
Oh, did you?
No, sorry, I did a personal trainer.
Personal trainer, that's right.
But the big thing that people are only starting to understand now is the gut-brain axis.
Yeah.
You are what you eat. Yeah. 90% of what you eat affects your brain.
Yeah.
But people put so much crap inside them,
don't they?
That they feel crap. I'm pretty much plant-based. I'm a vegetarian for 20 years. I have pizza on a Saturday night, my little boy. But most of it is clean, low process, plant-based. It makes you feel good. If you put crap inside you, it's not going to help
you. Does that give you enough energy? Because I find, I'm not plant-based, but I'm sort of moving in that direction slowly. But I find I need carbohydrate, because if I don't, I will wake up feeling exhausted.
No, you can still eat pastas and right. This year, since February, I've done 7 ultra marathons and 12 marathons. So I can live on a plate. And that's what's about move well.
Do you think when I wrote these down, I was thinking it's about getting a balance, isn't it, between them?
Everything's about, absolutely. Life is about a balance.
But you're moving. I mean, to do ultramarathons and marathons, do you think that's an obsession?
No, because I'm not a runner. And I'm not an obsessed runner. I have no Garmins, heart rates, put trainings. I can just run. And I started training again last November. I wanted to do 100K, and I did that. I've done many other things as well. The move well for me is feeling good, is actually mentally doing something.
Yeah.
But it's my only switch off. So to go and run for an hour, 2 hours, is the only time I don't check digital stuff, or I don't.
Yes, yeah.
Or I don't have the noise of something else. So
you run without earphones, for example.
I do podcasts, but that's my switch off of anything else. It's not work.
Mm.
It's not family, it's not friends, it's not the noise of life.
Mm.
I always listen to a podcast about either health, running, or psychology. So I'm learning something as I'm doing it, but I don't check the phone. But I do it to measure through Strava, but that's all I do.
Right.
But the move well is important for everyone. Yeah. And with founders, for them to perform optimally, they need to look after themselves.
So how do you persuade an entrepreneur with these 5 wells, as you call them? I'd add another one there, a black well, actually, which is a gravity well, which is about depression. But anyway, that's not living, is it? That's not a well, as that says. Right, so they're trying to do these things, but there is an emphasis on work, isn't there, because of the demands of the business that they're in and the fact that they're probably under-resourced. They're probably struggling with money, they're So how do you persuade an entrepreneur then to think, hold on a minute, matey, you've got to go to bed earlier or have a bath before you go to bed? How do you, because he would say, no, I can't do that, I haven't got time. How do you get through to him?
Well, you could go down the Arnold Schwarzenegger again, sleep quicker, I think is what I said once.
Did he really?
I think it's because he was talking about when he moved to America and he worked out for 6 hours, he studied for 6 hours, he trained for 6 hours, and then he had to sleep quicker or something to get his sleep. But it's all about driving optimal performance. And he can say, I've only got 4 hours sleep. But that's going to have a repercussion on the next day. And I don't believe that for a second. One of the things that founders struggle with is delegation.
Yeah.
That they own everything because they're the only one that can do everything.
Yeah.
And if that's true, you're never going to scale anyway. So it's a realization that you need to give things up, you know, to people that...
That's so hard, though, isn't it, when there's an ego involved and there's
it is.
It's their baby and, you know, and all that sort of stuff.
It is, but one thing... So I'm the UK partner of a company called Think and Grow, which is a global growth advisory business. And we work with founders and the boards to help them scale. And one thing we say to everyone is, for you personally to succeed as an individual in business and in the role that you do, you really only have three superpowers. And you say to a founder, what are your superpowers? And they can like
finance...
product, yes. Sales, yes. People, talent,
customer. Yeah,
raising
exactly.
money.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's fine, but it's never going to work for you. So realistically, you know, what are the things you enjoy and what you're great at? But we also ask the people around the table as well, you know, the chief product officer, the chief finance officer, and it kind of comes down to maybe fundraising, maybe sales, maybe strategy. And that's all they should focus on. Forget product. Forget the recruitment piece, outsource that, insource that, hire people to do that, or round the table to do that. But that's what you should really focus on.
Mm.
And that gives you time back. Because if you do everything else, the three things that you're amazing at, the business is going to grow. You know, that's how you get the time back.
Because that's those three things are why they started in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're right. So therefore, separate... things probably that you don't like doing as well from the things that you love doing, which is energizing in itself.
Yeah.
Outsource or delegate or whatever it is, the rest of that stuff, and trust them to get on with it. So you recruit the best people that
Correct.
You possibly can in those areas. Because I used to do this. I used to recruit the best people I could as an accountant because I'm not a good accountant.
Okay.
Just, you know, that's the way it is. So I don't have to worry about it. You just get on with it. But you're right, then it gives you a bit more time to think about all the other things, about the culture of your organization, how you look after yourself, what's your family life like, you know, when was the last time you went out for a drink with your missus, you know, all of those sorts of things as well.
Yeah, it. Lots of people don't speak openly to founders. Most people are nodding dogs if you are in the four walls of a startup, because you don't want to say too much because the founder will bark at you and disrespect you. I'm there just to tell it how it is.
Mm.
You either work with me or you don't.
Do people that work for founders learn from that? Do you speak to them as well? Do they see you speaking truth, if you like?
No. But maybe yes. And the reason I say that is that I work with founders confidentially. It's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
So we never talk outside the four walls of what I do with these founders. But... the continuation of that is that if the founder thinks that we need an extension of what I do, become more of a wider cultural piece to help the business, then we start having the conversations with the people around the table and maybe a layer below.
Mm. Has any founder that you've worked with said, I think my behavior's changed? Right. Therefore, go and check with my team. Just go and do a sense check to see whether they've noticed anything different. Has anybody ever done that?
Yeah, a few of them. So they will say, have a sense check. You know, have these kind of pulse surveys where you go and ask them over a quarter period or a 6-month period.
Yeah,
has my behaviour changed? And it's pretty black and white. It's either yes or no.
Yeah, that's true. But there could be nuances there, couldn't there? So, you know, yeah, he's listens more, or he doesn't get quite so angry more, or he looks more relaxed or whatever.
So one of the things I try and teach a founder is you can't be everything for everyone. You know, when I do my chief people officer role, I'd say to founders, you can't be the good guy and the bad guy. So when you're doing town halls with the startup, with your team, you can't be Steve Jobs, the vision, the dreamer, the creator, and everyone's like in awe, drooling, this is amazing. And then you flip to, but you're all shit. No one's doing anything like, hold on, you just said everything's amazing, yeah. and now you're having a shout. Said, leave that to someone else.
Yeah.
You just be the hero. And let me, the chief people officer, or someone else, talk the reality.
Yeah, that's a real difficult transition.
It is, isn't it? But that's when they see the change in the founders not barking. You know, they let someone else do the execution and drive that, but let them be that demigod that people look up to.
Yeah, yeah.
And let me or someone else do the barking. And that's when they start seeing this change. That's when they start mirroring this caring or different kind of aura around a founder that isn't just this.
And that must have a big... Do you notice, or have you noticed, any change in business performance because of that? So, and I think you've written somewhere about, you know, better productivity, better happiness, better less absenteeism, less staff churn and all that sort of stuff. Do you ever test for that as well? So, yeah, this is working, and convince the entrepreneur that actually they're going in the right direction and therefore need to do more.
It's a hard one to answer, because I don't think performance is totally aligned to just the founder being
the
good guy.
Yeah, it's like advertising, isn't it? Which bit works?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And people just think performance is, you know, we've got an amazing product and everyone loves it. And my view is it's not that. You know, my view is you need to drink the Kool-Aid, and you need to. So the founder needs to repeat every day why we do what we do. What's our mission? How we get in there? How does everyone contribute to it? That's how performance from a founder trickles down to an organization.
Yeah.
But for the average Joe on the floor, for them, it's generally, do they know what they do, as in role? Do they know why they're doing it? Do they know how they're doing it? And do they know how they contribute to the success of the organization? That's how you drive performance. Yeah. Because if you get up every day, you sit at your desk, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't really know why you're doing, how that contributes to the bigger picture. And are you being rewarded for it? And that's what drives performance. And that's what drives engagement. And that's what drives sincerity and inner business. So for the founder, it's just keep beating the drum. We are doing this for this reason. And we've made a real difference to these people. I want to thank you all for that. That gives them that warm feeling.
Yeah.
But for the individual, it's a case of, I know why I'm doing what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, why I'm rewarded for it. And I get it. And I'm just like this little pimple in the map, but it really makes a difference. And that's how you drive performance. But for founder, keep pushing the message. We are doing this. We've made a difference. We're getting there. We're almost there. Thank you.
That's really good. But can I just say, if, like me, you can't, you know, sometimes you wake up, well, I guess you've done it as well, but you wake up, you can't get out of bed, but you force yourself out of bed and you go into work to be present. Somebody saying all of those words makes, frankly, no difference, actually, because you just feel like shit. So how can we, because, the, and then my productivity could be zero that day, you know. How can we help those people to become, to deal with that particular issue that they've got, and yet still, and therefore feel more comfortable at work? How can we do that? And you may not even be able to answer it, because frankly, I ask this question a lot and nobody's answered it. And I'm not sure I can answer it either, for that matter. It's really, really difficult, isn't it? Until we get over the stigma of mental health, and it's almost where we started the conversation about being open about it.
Yeah. I don't think the stigma's ever going to go away. COVID was the most awful thing I've ever experienced. But one thing it did bring out was empathy across everyone. Everyone was in the same position. In that the CEO of the most powerful company was sitting at home with a family, and so was employee 10,000. Sitting at home with their family. They're all in the same position, not knowing what's going to happen, all doing Zoom calls, and they're all feeling really vulnerable. And people started talking a little bit more as to, I don't feel great today.
That's true. Yeah.
Now, it really helped people start elevating the conversation, and there's a bigger volume for we don't feel great, and people are open to do this because they're in that position. Unfortunately, it's gone back to real capitalism and pressure, and it's probably gone worse than it was in COVID, so I don't think it's helped.
Yeah.
But going back to the whole stigma piece, I'm not a branding person, but I think mental health needs a rebrand, because you know, it's mental illness that's a stigma, not mental health. Health isn't a bad word, but we say mental health as in depression, anxiety, bipolar, and all this. That's the illness, that then other than the health piece. But we bracket everything in this mental health two words, catch-all of everything.
Mm.
And it's a lot more than that. It's holistic approach to physical health and social health and environmental health. So you talk about how people going to work and feeling vulnerable.
Mm.
And it's that whole social well-being and environmental well-being and feeling better because you're there, because you're around people that genuinely care. And that can...
That's the point, though, isn't it? Sorry, I'm pointing my finger at you.
No, but it's right, but that is the point.
People who genuinely care. That's because you can go in, and if they're, you know, nobody knows, because you think you said yourself, it's an invisible condition.
It is invisible, yeah.
You know, whereas you break your leg, like you said, you're in a... Or you break your foot or something,
you're in a cast. Yeah, break your foot, and you're in a cast.
And
it's true.
People offer you a seat on the train, but now they don't, because they can't see it.
Yeah. People are so focused on themselves. It's selfishly, people are focused on themselves, trying to save their job, you know, trying to make money, trying to pay a mortgage. And you don't notice the little things. You can hide as much as you want when it comes to, I feel pretty crappy today.
Mm.
But if you are perceptive about how you may be acting or looking,
just
little things.
Yeah, that's self-awareness, actually, coming back to your original. Or
self-awareness or awareness around... You know,
others
is really important, because you are zoned in on yourself.
Yeah.
I'm doing my job. I'm coming in. Going to go home.
Yeah.
Done.
I'm treating people like shit. I'm being a grumpy old git, which a lot of people just say, oh, he's a bit grumpy today, isn't he? But actually, the underneath that might be the fact that he's had a life of abuse and alcohol in his family and God knows what else. And actually, it's just got on top of him that day. Yeah. So we should be kinder, because you finished your... One of your things by about being kind, wasn't it? I think those are the last two words you said, if I remember rightly.
Yeah,
it was on your TED talk.
It was. It's, you know, lots of things that we can do are all free. You know, we spend so much, and you probably did it as a CFO. You have lots of budgets on platforms, tools you need to spend loads of cash on. You know, and especially, you know, if you're doing CFO, you probably get the HR person going, we need this new tool today, we need this new platform.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that are just free.
Yeah.
You know, which is kindness, caring, perception, asking a question.
Doesn't it make you feel good as well? I love kindness. I love being kind to people, because it makes me feel good, for Christ's sake. You know, and if somebody gives me a kindness, there's a warmth and an empathy and a connection. And it only takes seconds. It's like, I held a door for somebody coming in today, right? And they said, oh, thanks very much. Cheers, mate. And I thought, oh, wow. They didn't just walk through without, you know, blanking me. Mm-hmm. They said, thank you. And I thought, yeah, shit, that's, you know, I just feel good about that. It may only last a little time, but it does help, doesn't it? And it's free. You're right. It's free.
So many things are free.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, yeah, you could be kind to someone at work, and because of the environment you're in, you could think, is there some kind of ulterior motive that they're doing this for? What do they want them being so kind for?
Yeah, he's going to ask me to do this nasty job now.
But yeah, jokes, you know, it is being perceptive in an office or the environment you're in. The hair might look different. They might be wearing clothes that they don't usually wear.
Yeah.
They might have just said something. They might be drinking something.
It's the eyes, I think.
Yeah,
they might
smell slightly different. There's so many different things.
Yeah.
And you either put an arm around them and ask them that question. You know, or you don't. And if you don't, you're kind of ignorant.
Yeah.
But it doesn't cost anything.
No, it didn't cost anything.
And they might just bite your head off, and that's fine.
They might just say, look, yeah, I'm fine, leave me.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a good chance if they do that, they'll actually come back to you and say, look, I'm really sorry about that, but I've had a bad time at home or something like that. And actually, that then breaks the floodgate and allows the conversation to happen. And hopefully that will be something that continues on and on.
Yeah, it's just... Yeah, there's a famous story about... the guy that jumped from that bridge in San Francisco. I can't remember what the bridge is called now. Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of like suicide bridge and so many people die. But this guy survived, like 1% of people survive, if that.
It's a bloody long way to fall.
And he jumped off and, I'll send you the link afterwards. And he jumped off, it's like, oh, shit, I didn't want to do this.
Changed his mind halfway down.
Because it's that realisation that they don't really want to do this. They just want someone to notice them. And that's the same in the office.
Mm.
You know, you're feeling really bad. You just want someone to notice that I'm not feeling great today. And it's just that question of saying, are you okay? You know, do you want to just grab a coffee?
Do you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt you there because it was an important point you're making, but I've just had a massive pang of guilt and shame.
Okay.
Because there will undoubtedly been times when I've been working, particularly when I was CFO at Superdry, where somebody's a bit off colour and I did nothing about it. And I'm thinking, shit, I should have bloody done something. And if we could get to the point where people like me in that position, and it was a few years ago now, actually don't not to do anything, but do something, then the world would be a better place, wouldn't it?
It's all about learning. You know, and you do this now in a powerful platform to help others. So
do you. You help others as well, don't you?
Yeah, I do. And yeah. And it's, I don't know why I do it. No, I generally don't know why I do this. There is an emotional toll in what I do.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. If it can help someone, great. You know, I'll probably thank my mother for why I do this. It's an amazing woman, a very kind woman. But it is kind, yeah. It's a kind woman. It's just being nice.
Yeah, it's being a human, isn't it?
Actually. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's almost as fundamental as that.
Yeah. When was it in history that we all became not like this?
Bastards. Yes.
But it's true, you know.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You know, you talk about we're all born the same in so much that, you know, we're not born to hate. We're not born racist. We're not born with any kind of evilness inside us. Something happens, and when did it start happening? You know, and we've got a chance to make a difference to ourselves and other people. And you know, it's hard. You know, society is difficult, really difficult.
Do you know what? We need more people like you in this world.
Bless you.
Because what you've been saying today has been resonating with me more so than most of the conversations I've had, actually. Is there anything else you'd like to add about maybe your business or anything like that?
I'm not a sales guy, so I'm not going to talk about my business.
Okay.
It's genuinely be kind to yourself and be kind to others. That's all I'll say. You know,
the first bit of that is the hardest, though, isn't it?
It is, and you know, I'd love to practice what I preach. You know, you are your worst critic. I love my wife and my child, and I treat them with so much love and respect. If I gave myself 10% of that love and respect that I give them, life would be easier for me.
Yeah.
But you do beat yourself up.
Yeah.
You know, but if you have someone else to try and give you those affirmations and be kind to you.
Yeah, you see, I mean, I do like those little acts of kindness from strangers, but when somebody I know and I have known for a long time, even my family, says something kind to me, it's not like I'll ignore it, but it won't resonate, really. It won't hit home. And I will move, I'll just keep going, you know, as if nothing's happened. I'll almost positively dismiss it and say, no, you don't mean that, you know, that's what's going on inside my head. And yet, why do I do that? Why do people do that? Why do I do that, for that matter? Why can't I just accept that somebody's saying something kind to me?
Because we don't think we deserve it.
Hence the title of this show.
It's true. Yeah. And that's it. We just don't think we are good enough to deserve a compliment.
Yeah.
And it's easier to help other people than help ourselves.
Isn't it just? Yeah.
Yeah.
I get far more satisfaction out of helping others than I do helping myself or even being kind to myself. And I don't know about you, but my head fills occasionally with just something that's happened probably 30 years ago where I was rude to somebody. And it'll live with me for an hour or 2 hours, and I can't get that thought out of my head. You know, that's I'm torturing myself, aren't I?
Yeah, there's a beautiful quote from Oprah Winfrey. I appreciate we're running.
No, don't worry. I've had the nod, actually.
Yeah.
We're all right.
Lots of people know about Oprah Winfrey's awful upbringing. And the quote that she says is, forgiveness is giving up the hope the past will ever change.
Yes.
But we spend so much time looking backwards.
Yes.
That we never let ourselves go forward.
Yes.
So when you think about that person 30 years ago, what you've done, it's not going to change.
No.
Let's just make a difference today. We can't change what happened yesterday.
No, you are absolutely right. And I have now got to the point through quite working at it for about 4 or 5 years of just saying, okay, it's popped into my head. Let's just dismiss it and I can get rid of it. And it doesn't affect me in anything like the way that it used to. But that, like you said earlier, it takes time. And it's a learning, and it's about self-awareness and about the fact that actually these things happen. You can't change what's happened in the past. You know, look forward.
Yeah, and that's all we can ever do.
Yeah.
You know, going back to the Rocky quote, you know.
Go on, read it out again. Go on.
Let me find it for you.
And we'll finish on that, because I think that is just, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'll
make sure, can you send it to me?
I will, and I'll set the scene. So
okay,
it's Rocky VI. He loves a franchise, Rocky. Sylvester Stallone does. But he's speaking to his son. So he's lost everything, Rocky. He's lost his wife as well. And his snotty son, who's had everything in life, comes up to him, says, Dad, don't do this fight. And Rocky's always got his fight in. And he turns around to his son. His son goes, I've got everything. You're embarrassing me. And he turns around and he goes, let me tell you something we both know. Okay. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place. I don't care how tough you are. It will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that's the realization when I talk to founders. It's don't beat yourself up. Life is tough and it's getting tougher. It really is. And you have to be honest with yourself.
Particularly in tech, which is your field of expertise.
Life is tough, so don't beat yourself up. Congratulate yourself. But every day is a learning and every day is that incremental growth in who you are as a human. And if you can just go to bed thinking you've done a little bit better, it's like running marathons.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't happen overnight. You can't just go and put your trainers on and work. 3 6 months worth of training program. Every single week, 5-10% more. And if you can just keep doing that, you've improved.
Yeah. It's like Formula One, isn't it? Formula One does it by tiny, tiny little increments because of, thousands of a second can make the difference between winning and losing.
Yeah.
And, you know, to do that, it's bloody tough because they're right at the forefront of technology, but actually that's how they view it. And the British cycling team did the same, didn't they?
Yeah, they had rails, but they did marginal gains.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. You can't take over the world today. It takes a long path of growth and success and failures, but keep moving forward.
So the overall message is there's a lot of hope, isn't there? Be kind to yourself, be kind to each other, and there's a lot of hope.
Just help each other.
Paul, honestly, it's been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming in.
It's a pleasure.
I've really, really enjoyed that chat.
And
good luck with your ventures.
Thank you.
Love to your family, of course.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Go back, give them my regards, please. And if they're listening to this, hello. Your dad's done really well, really well.
Thank you.
All right.
Love you, Steph. Love you, Abe.
Cheers.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.